We are reconvening the Committee on Health and Human Services and Housing. And it is, let me check, approximately 1:50 in the afternoon, and we are on Senator Nelson, Senate File 1181. I'm hoping that we can really center in and focus on the essence of the bill and move our agenda forward. Because of the late hour, I think that I'm going to reorder the agenda and have for today to make certain that we're able to get work in Senate File 1161, Senator Lori's Mental Health Provisions and Modifications, be the first of the three department bills on the agenda. So Senator Lori, be prepared that one will follow this. We'll see how far we get. If we do not get through the other two bills, we'll move those to a time when we can have adequate time to consider them.
When we're Senator, are you ready for the bill?
Pardon?
Madam Chair, are we ready to discuss the bill?
We are. I'm just trying to give an organization to the audience as to what it is that we're doing. I know there are people here to testify. So if I wasn't clear, I'll just run through it again. We're going to complete Senate File 1181 now, Senator Nelson's bill. We're going to the next agenda item will be Senate File 1161, which is the mental health provisions in the governor's budget. And with that, I'll just turn it back over. I know that you have, we have an author's amendment. Sarah, did we pass the first amendment? We did, but you have another amendment,
yes.
Senator Nelson?
Madam Chair and committee, thank you very much. I do have a, and it would be an oral amendment, but it's very short. And again, it is a reflection of working with all of the stakeholders and interested parties to get the language exactly correct. So, Madam Chair, I would offer the following oral amendment. On line 1.8, after the word employer, insert and healthcare organization. I'll repeat that. Organizations. After the word employer on line 1.8, insert and healthcare organizations.
Senator Nelson, there are two employers there. So there's subdivision 5, employer mandatory reporting. Are you meaning to add it there or
yes.
Further?
No, just in the bold text.
In the bold text. Mm-hmm. It's an oral amendment. Any discussion? Senator Eaton.
Madam Thank Chair, I'm not done. There's a couple other little
okay.
pieces. So Madam Chair.
Yes.
The rest of that oral amendment is on line 1.12. Strike the words or and is, change the word diverting to the past tense and say diverted. Line 1.13 will be the same. Strike the third or in that sentence. The two words are or is. Mm-hmm. Change the word violating to violated.
Okay, Senator Nelson has offered an oral amendment on page on line 1.18 after employer, add and health care organization.
Madam Chair,
yes.
That would be plural, health care organizations.
Shins. Mm-hmm. On line 1.12, eliminate or and the is and diverting and replace it with the term diverted past tense. On 1.13, eliminate the third or and the word violating and replace violating with the word violated.
Yes, Madam Chair, and on line 1.13, the word is also deleted.
I don't care which. I'm
right before the word
or and is. Okay,
yes,
thank
ma'am.
You. Thank you. Very good. Any further discussion? Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have to speak strongly against this bill and the amendment. This is not supported by the Minnesota Nurses Association, and in fact, the Board of Nursing said they would not be proposing this bill this year. This totally dismantles the self-reporting process that is in, so that people can self-refer themselves to treatment if they're finding themselves addicted to a substance and having problems. And they aren't going to do that if they're immediately going to be required to be reported to the board or to the state. So I have to say that all the studies have shown this will actually decrease reporting incidents and that it's totally counterproductive.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Eaton. I certainly understand your concern. And we definitely do not want to step in the way of self-reporting. And we have worked diligently with the licensing boards and HPSP to make sure that is not the case. And this legislation in front of you today does not do anything in regards to self-reporting. It basically states that an employer who knows that its employee has diverted controlled substances, a felony, I believe, must report that to the applicable licensing board. And, Madam Chair, that is the job of the licensing boards, to protect the health of the public. So I certainly understand your concern, Senator Eaton, and we worked very diligently to make sure that that was not an issue. And I will let Mr. Williams speak further to that issue regarding self-reporting.
Thank you. And as you report to the, as you discuss that further, I think the question, if I understand, that's being raised by Senator Eaton is, under the current law, if a person self-reports and then from that they begin a process of treatment or recovery, then there is no reporting to the board. If there is reporting to the board as a result of self-reporting, the board is obligated to engage in an activity affecting that person's license to practice. So I think what Senator Eaton is saying is that when you, as soon as you report something to the board has a process that they have to engage in that does not occur under the current self-reporting. That's what Senator Eaton is saying is going to discourage people from coming forward when they need help. So that's I want to raise that issue up for discussion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Eaton, I think your point is well taken. What this bill does not do, however, is take away the right for any licensed health professional to self-report. That remains unchanged. And if, in fact, someone is addicted, has a problem with drugs, they're diverting drugs, they can still self-report to HPSP confidentially. All this does is require the employer who has knowledge of diversion to report that to the board. It is true if there is a report to a board, the boards are required by law to conduct an investigation. That does not always mean there is discipline. In many cases, if someone is reported to the board and there's an investigation and there's a problem with addiction, one of the options available to the board is to refer the licensee to HPSP for monitoring and return to practice. But we were very concerned because we did not want to interrupt the confidential self-reporting mechanism that's provided for under HPSP, and that remains unchanged by this bill.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To me, I mean, somebody who's struggling with addiction is not going to get themselves in trouble by reporting if they know that it's going to go to their licensing board. I mean, it's just not going to happen. And so it is, in effect, ending that program. But I do want to know in the amendment what the definition is of knowledge. There's a on 1.2, or if the knowledge was obtained in the course of a professional patient relationship.
Madam Chair, Senator Eaton, knowledge is reporting knowledge or information is already in many of the practice acts that require reporting of information. It's simply if you have knowledge of diverting drugs, it has to be reported. There is no definition of knowledge. It's the same word that's used in all the other reporting requirements contained in the Nurse Practice Act, the Medical Board Practice Act.
So is this, excuse me, Madam Chair.
Yeah, Senator Eaton, what is it that, would you mind elucidating what you're concerned about in the terminology or what your specific issue is for response?
Madam Chair, my concern is that, is this hearsay? Is this something that, as has happened in a facility I was in, that one patient was overheard talking to another patient, that the nurse gave them medications they weren't prescribed, and of course it turned out to be not true, but there was a massive investigation, and so I'm a little touchy about that subject. I think that nurses are professionals. They do an excellent job. They do a stressful job. And if they find themselves in a problem with chemical dependency, they should have the option of dealing with it without having to be published in the board's paper and having everyone know that they're under investigation.
Senator Nelson.
Madam Chair and committee members, I understand your concern, Senator Eaton, and there is nothing in this bill that would change the role of the health professionals service program in any way. So a nurse could self-report to HPSP and be in the program and get the services they need. This bill does not change that at all. This bill specifically says the employer who has knowledge, which we will let our attorneys describe to you, but that is a high level. It's one of the, it's not hearsay. It is a legal term that's used in many statutes, and it's a high level. It's you must have knowledge. And so the licensing board that, or the employer that has knowledge that their employee has diverted patient drugs must report to the licensing board, whose actual job is to allow the, this will allow the board to continue on with its tool to protect public safety. So I don't believe that, I think you've raised a very valid concern, but the bill before you will not change or what is current practice in regards to your concern. And in fact, I would draw members' attention to this letter that is in your packets. I think you also have a color copy. And you will notice that the letter is addressed to you, and the very first line says, "The boards of medical practice, nursing, and pharmacy support the enactment of Senate File 1181. It further says, the bill requires employers of an individual regulated by these boards to report all knowledge that a healthcare professional has diverted controlled substances in the workplace."
Senator Nelson, I think that the question here to get to the essence of Senator Eaton's concern is that, is hearsay or a rumor considered something that's reportable by the organization to the board, or do they have to go through some due diligence in order to make certain that there's validity to that? And the other is that although the Board of Nursing is supporting this, sometimes what the board is recommending and what the Nurses Association sees is in the best interest of the nurse are not aligned. So the second question is, has the Nurses Association participated with the board in this language?
Madam Chair, I will tell you, no, I have visited with the Board of Nursing about other issues before this committee. They have not addressed this bill with me. They did not raise concerns regarding this bill. The MMA is neutral on this bill. The SEIU folks, I visited with them last night. They're neutral on this bill. So Senator Eaton's concern is the first concern that we've heard. And I will let Dr. Berg or Mr. Williams further discuss knowledge as author's intent. I'll be perfectly clear. Knowledge is a high bar. It means no, you know. It does not include hearsay. And I'll let some of the attorneys further describe that.
Madam
Please,
Chair, Senator Eaton, I'm on the Board of Nursing, obviously, and I was
Mr.
not
Mr. Williams,
aware.
I have to say your name for the record.
I'm sorry, Stuart Williams. Madam Chair, Senator Eaton, I was not aware that the Nurses Association was opposed to this bill.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen and Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Nelson, you have been working on this for a year and a half.
Yes.
I understood in your testimony, original testimony, and I would assume that you would have heard from the association if there was problems before you brought the bill to this. So I'm a little surprised that all of a sudden we take a break and there seems to be an issue here. Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As a matter of fact, during our break, I did call the Minnesota Nurses Association because I had grave concerns about this bill. I know we had tried to prevent it from coming into a hearing in the past, and I was informed that they strongly opposed this bill. They had no idea it was being heard today, and they had had no contact about it. I understand that the HPSP program stays in place, which I'm grateful for, but the part that doesn't stay in place is any advantage in self-reporting. If you self-report and you get to go to treatment and you don't have an official record with the board and you don't have it in the board's reporting paper that they put out, then there's an incentive to do that. If you know that it's going to be reported to the board, et cetera, there's no point.
Madam Chair?
Senator Nelson.
I think that we have a misunderstanding here, Senator Eaton. If there is a confidential self-report to HPSP, the licensing boards would not know. So the licensing boards would only be notified if the employer knew the health professional was diverting patient drugs. So the confidentiality of HPSP is not changed one iota. There is no way that the licensing board would even know that the self-referred person is in HPSP. So I really understand your concern, but I don't
one
think
more, one more question, Senator Eaton, then we're going to move forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand how that program works. The problem is, how does that employee get off work to go to treatment without the whole issue being established?
Yeah.
If they have to report it.
So, Dr. Berg, Mayo Clinic.
Thank you.
The employer in that situation would not become aware of diversion. They may become aware that their employee has entered HPSP and has an addiction, but HPSP would be under no obligation to report to the employer that there had been diversion or not diversion. The employee would not be under any obligation to report to the employer that there had been or had not been diversion. In a true self-report to HPSP, there would be nothing that would activate what we're trying to accomplish with this bill. It would be anonymous. Wouldn't happen.
Senator Nelson, final comments, please,
yes, final
and then
comments.
We need to move forward.
To Senator Rosen's comments, we have worked on this since November of 2011 with the licensing boards. HPSP has been in my office. I visited with MMA about this, and up until this very moment, there has been no concern, and Nurses Association certainly has not. I am unaware of any concern except for what Senator Eaton mentioned today, and so I have to wonder if maybe they truly understand the intent of the bill before us today.
Okay, thank you. This bill is Senate File 1181. Senator Nelson's moved that it pass and as amended and be referred to the floor. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay.
No.
The motion passes. So now, Senator Lori, we are moving to Senate File 1161.
Treatment.
Thank you, Senator Lurie.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. We do have Senate File 1161 before us. Actually, for the next three bills that are on the agenda, I'm not sure how far we'll get, but these are actually portions of the governor's budget. Senate File 1161 is strengthening chemical and mental health services. The three major components in the bill are mental health crisis response services, clinical care coordination as a Medicaid benefit, and family psychoeducation services as a Medicaid benefit. And here to describe more about the importance of these is Commissioner Jessen, and I would open it up for that.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Jessen. And may I say that I really appreciate that you're spending time with us today and tomorrow and the next day. And we really appreciate that. I'm sorry about the delays. I know you have a busy schedule. But I wanted the committee members to know that out of the governor's bill, I pulled these three components. I thought that it was important for the committee to have a chance to look at what are the proposals here in terms of its policy implications, not its fiscal implications. And in order for us to really have an overview before it would typically just go to finance, we'll get a chance to have some discussion. And that's what I've asked from the department, is not to read us the bill or to read the language, but to talk about what is the vision here and how do these incremental pieces that will be proposed in various budget fit into what it is we're trying to accomplish, in this case, in the area of chemical and mental health services. So, and for our conversation to be around that vision and around how these pieces fit into that. So with that introduction is my expectation of what the opportunity might be here. I'll turn it over to our commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Madam Chair, if I may ask just for a point of clarification, when we're you're asking for the overall vision with regard to mental and chemical health services and why the governor's budget proposes the things it does, I'm happy to describe that. It is broader than just the few items that are in Senate File 1161, which don't include even the children's mental health and crisis mobile teams. So would you prefer me to address the broader picture or just the items that are in that relate to policy that are in Senate File 1161? I'm happy to do it either way.
Yes. Well, I think that we have about 20 minutes, and so I would like you to use the time to give. I know you can't go into all the detail, but that sort of a general sense that this isn't distinct pieces of legislation. They are in relationship to something overall. And so I think we should be talking about these things in relationship to where it is we're trying to go. So if we could get a backdrop, it doesn't have to be, you know, the history of the universe or anything, but something that helps put context around these two proposals.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for that clarification. As you know, this, DHS is the authority for the state in mental health and chemical health, and our state has made real progress across the last 20 and 25 years as we've moved people out of institutions. We've really transformed the public mental health system, made a lot of progress on a bipartisan basis in 2007 with some real reforms. But starting last summer, the department really stepped back and said, where are the gaps in the continuum of care in both our mental, particularly focusing in the last year on our mental health system, but also starting to look at our substance abuse system. And I must say, what we are proposing the governor's budget is not a complete makeover. It doesn't address each of them. But it really does, the pieces of it, address what we see are the biggest concerns. And to say they're concerns doesn't mean that there's not a lot of great work going on in our mental health system today. But let me just kind of give you what we see as the big picture issues that we need to address and then frame how we're at least starting in these budget proposals to do that. We see a real lack of integration among services and service providers. I think many of you have heard me say this before. We have our mental health system, which far too often is very separate from our primary care and clinics and hospital system, which is separate from our CD system. And yet we have so many people that we treat with co-occurring disorders who have mental illness and chemical dependency and physical illness. They're not well served by that lack of integration, and we spend too much money because of that lack of integration. We have some, while we have many great services, we lack some necessary services for some of our small populations, especially those with the most complex needs. And we try to at least begin to address that. I think the other thing we saw was that we have some statewide services that aren't statewide, some things that we know work really well, and I think our crisis mobile mental health teams are an example of that, but that we don't have available in all parts of our state. And I think the big picture thing we see is in both chemical dependency and in mental health is we have a mental health system that too often is built to treat episodes of care. If someone meets a certain disability, significant level of disability standard, and they're in an episode, then we treat that. But we don't do enough to catch people, to intervene early, and we certainly don't do enough to support people after that episode. And if we don't have that support, then they often just end up reentering the system. So as I said, the budget and the deficit, we are not pretending to say, let's do the complete overhaul, but we want to begin to make progress, I think, to address those concerns and to build upon the good system that we do have. Some of the things are not that I'm going to mention. We've talked about a bit before. They're not in this particular bill. They are in the governor's proposed budget, but I think they're important, so I'll briefly describe them with your permission, Madam Chair. And one is the substance abuse screening, brief intervention, and referral to treatment, what they call ESPRT. And this really is an evidence-based practice. It's one of the number one things our statewide substance abuse strategy suggested that we do as a state. And what it is, it really tries to get at that integration issue I raised. So this is money, kind of one-time money, to train those primary care doctors and advanced practice nurses and others to really start screening early on for substance abuse issues, and then to make referrals. And what this shows is for a lot of people, if you screen, if you do a referral, and just a very brief intervention, we can catch things earlier. So that is certainly an important policy perspective. I was down in Rochester, I believe, and Senator Rosen was there with me when we were doing some of our statewide hearings on substance abuse. And we heard great testimony from some physicians and providers associated with the Mayo's health system in southern Minnesota about what a great thing tool this ESPRT approach was, but it's only in a few places and pockets in Minnesota, and that's something with training we think we can take statewide. I think the second proposal is in the governor's budget are our crisis response services. These are mobile teams of providers that can go and meet people where they are and when they need that help. Intervening earlier, maybe meeting people at home so they don't have to end up in the emergency room, has really been helpful where we have it to prevent suicide, to reach people before they need hospitalization, to meet with them in people who are in a mental health crisis, to be able to meet with them in their home is you're much more able to move things quickly than if they have to come to the ER. And we have these mobile crisis teams now in 59 counties in Minnesota for children and 49 counties for adults, and the governor's budget proposes to expand those so that we can reach more of Minnesota. Our third broad proposal, and a really critical one, and I know, Madam Chair, you know a lot about this, are school-based school-length mental health grants. This is the governor's budget proposes to double these. This is something, as I've gotten the opportunity to travel around Minnesota, and the great thing is you can hear about what's working and sometimes what's not working. And these are things that work. You know, you're able to intervene and reach out to children where they are, to reach kids who are never, most of whom may never end up, at least until there's a crisis, coming to the mental health clinic. And it's less stigma if they're being reached in the schools. And when I've talked to some of these counselors who are working in the schools and some of the kids who use them, they're just amazing testimony to how this works. Also, better for parents. If you think about it, and especially if I've heard really important in greater Minnesota, if you think about it, to get a child to a mental health counseling session. One, you have to know that they're really to identify the need, and this helps do that. But then, if to get them to that session, especially in Greater Minnesota, you're having to take them out of school, the parent takes off of work, and you just often don't have the follow-up necessary. So that is certainly, we think, a really important way of intervening early. The just a couple of other ones, and the ones that are in this bill, also are really focused on our high-needs children. And one of those items is the proposal for a clinical care coordination benefit. This is really aimed at children with mental health needs who are very high cost as well as having high mental health needs. And this is kind of geared towards those kids where we spend in medical assistance more than $50,000 a year. So we're paying for a lot of care, but it is really not as coordinated as it should be. And if you think about it, the way we pay doctors often and other mental health workers, we pay them for the time they spend with the patient, which is, of course, appropriate. But this would also say, let's pay them for the time they can spend coordinating that care and talking to each other and avoiding duplication and having the best outcomes for these children. And finally, we are proposing a family psychoeducation benefit in our public programs. You know, these children, these high-needs children with mental health problems spend a lot more time with their families than they do even when we try and reach them in schools and we try and reach them, you know, through clinics. And so this is, you know, we're not requiring parents to do this, but for parents that want to, this is a benefit so they can learn more about their child's mental illness and they can learn what they can do in the home setting to help support the therapy and the treatment. It's something that's budget neutral because we think it actually more than pays for it, it will pay for itself. So those are, Madam Chair, is a very high level of the what we see as kind of the policy pieces of the governor's proposals in mental health and chemical dependency.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. And Senator Lori, are there some other things in this particular bill, 1161? In addition to the things that you're talking about, I'm seeing a section on providing transition service for individuals moving from highly structured treatment programs back into the community. And then on the last page, page 4, restructure of coverage policy and rates to improve adults' rehabilitative mental health services. Yep. Just to highlight on that, what that's about.
Those are in the bill as well.
Commissioner Jessen.
Madam Chair, members, I'm sorry, I was kind of just thinking about policy ones. Those are a little more related to money, but certainly they impact policy, and let me just generally address those and answer any questions. Looking first at Subdivision 8, our state-operated services account, you know, this would propose to give me as commissioner the authority to spend monies that are coming into this fund to provide services to transition individuals. And here we're thinking particularly of people who are at Anoka, our state hospital, who have met, you know, they no longer need that hospital level of care. But for a number of them, we found they're also there's not the community supports, the really strong community supports where we can just discharge them. And so this is really trying to letting us redirect money, some of the monies from this fund to contract with providers to provide some of those supports so that we can move more people more quickly out of Anoka when they should be. But we need more of those community supports. We actually have issued an RFP and have got two providers to find out who would be willing to provide these services. We think there's a lot of interest. This would allow us to use the monies for that purpose. And looking at the final provision, 256B.761 subdivision D, this would grant me as commissioner the authority to restructure our policy and rates for what we call our ARM services. These are mental health services we provide in the community to really, once again, for a lot of those high-needs individuals with a lot of complex needs. It's a really effective way. The providers do a great job at this work, but what we've found is that our payment structure right now isn't enough. You know, and so if we have high-quality providers going out of business, what we'll end up with are these patients not having the services they need in the community, and they end up, you know, in hospitals. And so it gives us authority to do that. What it does basically here is, you know, and I can give you my understanding of this, and I have Assistant Commissioner Dave Hartford that if you have more questions can go into more detail. This is what I saw as kind of more a finance piece, but basically take some of the monies that are now going to counties, I think it's about $6 million a year, but to make this service a Medicaid service so that we can draw down about $10 million more from the federal government if it's a Medicaid service, so that we can do more for this population and as part of that enhance the arms rates. But I will be the first to admit, Madam Chair, at this point on that one, if there are a lot of questions, I would need to refer to Assistant Commissioner Hartford.
Thank you for that. I know that there is an enormously overwhelming number of needs in the area of this area of strengthening chemical and mental health services. I was just meeting with a sheriff the other day who said that they're just struggling. They'll pick somebody up that really is in a psychotic state, agitated, and going to be arrested for probably in a manic phase, stole a car or something, poor judgment. And, of course, it's a crime, but it's a recognizable mental illness, sent to the ER, local ER, and they refuse to take the patient because they can be kept safe in a jail. And they have no capacity to take it in, and they're afraid that once they do take the patient, there's no place to place them after they're finished in the intensive inpatient psychiatric treatment. I see that these funds that you're talking about are really only going to facilitate movement out of state-operated services into community-based services, but I just want saying that to let you know it isn't just state-operated services that's feeling this enormous backup and inability to move people out into less costly treatment options. So,
Madam Chair.
Senator Hayden and then Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Lurie and Commissioner Jetson. I stepped out for a little bit, so I wasn't sure if you covered this, and I hesitate to bring it up. But when you're dealing with the particular types of clients that you talk about that are kind of chronically chemically dependent, if you will. I like that better than inebriate because I don't like that word, but who have just kind of cycled through treatment after treatment, maybe dual diagnosed, maybe not, maybe because of their chemical health issue that has caused them to have significant mental health issues. How much of your flexibility do you have to have facilities that help to manage that process? So things like harm reduction, groups, places where we have decided, our people have decided that they don't want to go to treatment anymore, but they don't necessarily want to stop drinking either. And that's essentially what we talk about. And so our process traditionally has been to kind of get them and put them in the jail and then send them to treatment. Or then if they do it long enough, we send them to one of our facilities. And so I know that there's been a lot of work and somewhat controversy with harm reduction models and our ability to pay for them. Can you kind of help me walk through if your bill starts to deal with some of those models?
Senator Jessen? Or Commissioner, excuse me. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be insulting.
Madam Chair, I wasn't insulted. I thought it was a promotion. Madam Chair, Senator Hayden, our proposals in the governor's budget do not address that particular issue, which I understand is a real issue. But if I may say a word about chemical dependency, as I said earlier, and you may have not come in yet, Senator, when we really looked at the continuum of care and tried to figure out where do we most need to address things, you know, today, even with the budget deficit and everything else, we focused this year more on the mental health system. We're doing a few things in the chemical dependency area. But part of that is because there is a report due to the legislature, I think at the end of this week, on March 15th, which really you directed us last year to look at the continuum of care in our chemical dependency program and to make recommendations to you about what we should do going forward. I'm looking at a version of that report. You will get that. So that's why we really are looking at that issue and many others. If I may say so, though, we think that this coming year, our year and a half, is a huge opportunity to take a fresh look at our chemical dependency treatment system in Minnesota. And that's because with the changes in federal law, chemical dependency treatment will become an insurance benefit everyone has to have that has health insurance. And it also means that there are some things that we have to pay for with state dollars now that should be paid for through insurance. So to us, it really gives us the opportunity, and that's what we're trying to do in this report that will be coming your way, to step back and saying, instead of doing now, which is what we're doing now, which is really episodic, treat the episode, we should have the opportunity to start saying, how do we have that continuum to do more prevention and early identification, but also to support people in recovery, and that will look different for different people. And so we see that as a real opportunity moving forward, but it's not in this bill, Senator.
So, Madam Chair, I just want to...
Yes, Senator Hayden.
I just want to be clear that I think that that continuum is well, but there's another part of the continuum that isn't recovery. And this is where... It gets a little sticky, and I know in our traditional models, it's really not recovery. The person is still actively using. Now, the model really kind of tries to get people to think about their use and relative to the natural consequences that happen. But there is this idea that I don't want to go to treatment. I've been there 10 times before. I want to still use. And I'm going to go out, and then we pay for that, right? So they end up in detox or the emergency room, or as Senator Sharon said, is jail. So there is kind of another model that says, how do we have a role, and how do we manage that? And so I don't want to belabor the point. I just want to make the point that I think that there is an inroad on the continuum of chemical dependency issues that ends up with a person not being in recovery.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Hayden covered a lot of what I was going to say, but I did want to thank the commissioner. Obviously, you've been listening to the people who work in community mental health, having done that for a number of years myself. You get it, and I appreciate that.
Thank you. Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. Senator Lori, thank you for looking at this, trying as much as you can to look across the spectrum. The provisions that we're looking at where we're requiring federal approval medical assistance waiver, is this being done in other states? Is it being done in the private sector, the family psychoeducation, and the clinical care consultation? I'd just like to know where these ideas sprang from. Have they been worked on? And obviously, we're hoping for success, but a little bit of background for me would be helpful.
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Benson, I'll answer that the best I can. For more detailed information, I certainly have people here who can, you know, answer that probably better than I can. I don't know exactly how many states. This is not novel. I would say, for an example, the family psychoeducation services, you know, we do... You know, today, in those school districts, for example, who have our school-based mental health grants, some of those dollars end up being used to help the families. You know, so we actually see having a separate benefit through MA as a way to let, like, those dollars actually be more used for school-based mental health grants. So it's something we're doing often in parts of Minnesota, here or there, where we can. This is one of those ways I was talking about kind of earlier where we saw, let's take something that's working in some parts of our state and make it statewide. But I can certainly either have someone come up who knows the answer or get back to you about how many other states. I just don't
think. Thank you, Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the interest of time, I don't need someone to come up. I'll just have a side conversation, and I'm just hoping that we get success out of these and want to know where it's coming from.
Senator Lori, I know that Sue Abderholden also was going to testify. I'm going to ask Sue if there's something that you need to add to this conversation at this time, or if we can hold off for a future hearing.
Okay. Madam Chair, while she's coming up.
Yes, Senator Rosen.
Some clarification. Are we going to pass these now, come back, and deal with them at 6 o'clock when we come back?
We are going to just do one section. We're only looking at Senate File 1161 at this time.
And Madam Chair, just to, as a clarification, too, I'm not sure what the Chair's desire is, but each of these, as was described, is actually a component of the Governor's budget bill, and as is the history with the governor's budget bill, that did go directly to to finance. So this language already exists in the Finance Committee as well. It's just that because of the significant policy implications of several of these pieces, we felt it important, both Senator Sharon and I, in working together, that we had an opportunity to give the policy a hearing, listen carefully to the concerns brought forward, and make sure that those were represented well in our lead-up to the budget process and hearing. So I'm not sure what the chair's wishes are with these three bills, but that is the kind of the backdrop.
My wish is to move this, if we can, within the next few minutes, and then we'll pick up the rest in the hearing later this evening, because we will be recessing and reconvening at 6 o'clock this evening. But my goal really was, because this would, otherwise this would go directly to finance. This governor's bill would go directly to finance if I didn't ask for at least some components of the, you know, financing is related to a new course or a new direction of the policy of the state, and that we begin at least to see the context out of which the funding request is coming. This is just a beginning in this area. So there'll be much more coming forward to us, I think, in the future about supporting and improving mental health and chemical dependency services. And on the psychoeducation, when I was first practicing in psych mental health, Senator Eaton might know this, we used to be able to have families come into inpatient settings for a week and engage in family treatment in patient hospital setting. Because the outcomes, you know, you're talking about, is this a proven out? The outcomes, if family is engaged, are substantially better for people to be able to recover if they have developed the support system around them once they transition out of the more structured treatment program, that the support system is in place. So this is critically important that it become part of what is reimbursed. Senator Laurie, or Ms. Abderholden.
Thank you. Madam Chair, very quickly, members of the committee, for the record, Sue Abderholden with NAMI Minnesota. Just want to add our support for the family psychoeducation and the mental health clinical care consultation. And again, if we can bill MA for those, we may free up some of the school-linked mental health dollars because we'll be able to bill MA, so it's kind of a win-win. And I did want to mention that the armed services, they really are in a critical situation right now. We are losing providers because of the low payment rates, so it really is kind of critical to address that. And then I will just mention that we are working with the department to just clarify the language on page 2 to make sure that, in fact, when we're trying to move people out of the security hospital or out of Anoka, that those grants, those pilot projects can go to the community providers. They don't have to be state-operated, which I know is the intent, and we just wanted to clarify the language. Thank you.
Well, thank you for that. I was going to ask, and I will wait for finance, of the impact of this on counties in terms of their ability to support these community, their community resources and outreach. And if we're taking resources that make it difficult to accomplish that, then I think we have to look at that closer. Senator Laurie?
Madam Chair, I'd move Senate File 1161 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance.
You've all heard the motion. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion passes. Thank you. And we'll see you all at 6 o'clock this evening. We're in. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. I got an announcement. Maybe not for you, Senator. Oh, I'm to ask members to keep papers in your folders for tonight. Thank you very much. And we'll be in this room. We'll be in this room at 6 p.m. We're in recess.